My name is Sunny Miller. I'm the director at Trap Rock Peace Center in Deerfield, Massachusetts. And on the line with us this evening is Sergeant Kevin Benderman and his wife, Monica Benderman, in the vicinity of Fort Stewart, Georgia. Kevin, you were stationed in Iraq for, I believe, 6 months. Can you tell us about that experience a bit? What was it like for you in Iraq?
It's insanity. I don't know that I can describe it in just a few sentences, but it's the craziest thing I've ever been involved with.
Mm-hmm. And what were you doing in Iraq? What was your assigned duty there?
My assigned duty was to be a team leader for a group of Bradley fighting vehicle mechanics.
As a team leader, were you in charge of maintenance or travel, directing following maps? What did you do?
We were in charge of repairing Bradley fighting vehicles as they become either mechanically damaged or would be damaged by combat.
Mm-hmm. Well, one would think that that would be something back at the garage, and you really wouldn't see much of that of the warfare firsthand. What did you see?
Well, actually, there's no such thing as a garage in a combat zone. And the unit I was with was a cavalry unit, so they were a forward operating unit. And we operated independently of a brigade level. So we were pretty much out there on our own.
Mm-hmm.
And as where I was as a mechanic, I went forward with the scouts to make sure that the vehicles were in operational condition.
So you were way out there, seeing our own soldiers wounded and dying and seeing the Iraqis as well?
Well, yes.
What kinds of wounds were you witnessing?
Well, I noticed shrapnel wounds on soldiers and various other types of wounds. And there was a lieutenant that was in the same battalion as me, but not in the exact same location. He was just a few miles away, and he was killed in the combat.
You mentioned that this war is insanity. What was the psychological state of yourself and others in the combat zone?
Well, in combat zone, everyone is hyped up, and their adrenaline is running full steam, so you just seem to be hyper-aware of everything.
And now, back at stateside, you're in a transition point. How did your feelings about that insanity reflect during this time?
Well, once you come back from a deployment to a combat zone, you're able to have time to think about the things that you've seen, and you had to see what you were doing and what other people were doing in the area that you were. And it gives you time to think about all that stuff and to realize that, you know, the war is just, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that human beings should not be involved in.
Mm-hmm. Now, you filed a conscientious objector claim. Can you tell us what you have said to the military? I understand you're asking for a discharge as a conscientious objector?
Yes, I filed for conscientious objector on December the 28th of 2004. And basically, that's it. I want them to discharge me on the ground that I have a conscientious objection to war of any kind at any time.
This is a pretty big change for you from a time that you signed up to be in the military and then again became active duty. Can you talk about the change in you now from that time?
Well, when I first entered the military in 1987, I did so under the influence that there was a lengthy family history of military service dating back to the American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear about that your entire life, and then you hear everything talking about, you know, be all that you can be in the military, and it's honorable to be in the military and go to war and all this other stuff. But once you actually see combat firsthand, you realize that there's no honor in being able to kill as many people as you possibly can in the shortest period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you the best with your conscientious objection claim, and I just wonder, did you file that claim on the basis of moral, ethical, philosophical grounds?
Well, I guess you would say it's a combination of all of those. I mean, how moral is it to be able to look through the sights of a high-powered rifle and kill another human being?
Mm-hmm.
And philosophical grounds, I mean, you have to understand how much of a waste war is, what it does to the young people that are sent over there, because the military is made up of a majority of 18, you know, 19, 20-year-old people, and you see the inhumane way that they have to treat themselves in war in order to be able to survive in a war.
Now, you're 40, is that right?
Yes, I'm 40.
So your perspective on this time, the effects on these young men, you could compare it to your own experience as a young man, how different that would be.
Well, sure. I mean, everyone goes through a lot of changes from the time they're 18 until the time they're 40, and so they may be a little more mature, and they look at things a whole lot differently, I feel, than most 18-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they're invincible anyway. And the military kind of plays that up and gets them all hyped up and say, oh, yeah, we're ready to go to war, you know. But that's just, it's wrong to play on someone's emotions and mental state that way. I mean, these kids just graduated high school, and the first time they're away from their mother and father's home, and then they find themselves in a war zone. And it's just madness to make young men and women think that they are able to go to war.
You've experienced a lot of support, as I understand, and we're grateful that, Monica, you can be on the line with us. On this question of family support, Monica, what, how has this affected your life for Kevin to have a change of heart and declare his conscientious objection?
How has it affected it that he has?
Yes.
Well, I've always had my beliefs, and, you know, we're independent people, and so we kind of... He's made his choice, and it impacts me in the consequences that he faces because of his choice, but it coincides 100% with my beliefs. So, you know, I support him 100%, and I will support him against the people that criticize him, and I will definitely do what I can to help others see the validity of his choice, and, you know, maybe we can help people realize that, you know, it's the right choice.
I commend you for supporting Kevin and exercising conscience when it does go against the flow, you know, of
mm-hmm.
of what's going on. Can you speak a little bit about the support that you need to face the denial of the military has denied Kevin his conscientious objection claim to this point? What are you facing in the weeks ahead?
Well, right now, we don't know. Right now, it's at the point where the final recommendation that is required from the division level is that's pending. That's what we're waiting for. Once that recommendation is made, if it's favorable, if it comes back saying that the captain that interviewed Kevin at the last hearing is sincere, then it will go on to the Department of the Army for further consideration. If it comes back and he says that he doesn't believe in Kevin's sincerity, then Kevin actually will have a little bit of a time to formulate a rebuttal and add that to the packet before it does go to the Department of the Army.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from the policy standpoint, we're still in a holding pattern waiting to hear what that recommendation is.
Mm-hmm.
From a psychological standpoint, you know, it's just, we just keep going because you can sit and dwell on it and say, oh, you know, what if this happens, what if that happens, but it's not going to do us any good because it's all speculation. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, we try to talk to people about what we're feeling and what we're going through. We have a lot of people talking to us that have been in our shoes from other wars, and, you know, they provide a tremendous amount of support, and, you know, we just take it one day at a time.
Wonderful. And, you know, from our point of view in the peace movement, really when a soldier makes a conscientious decision to not participate in an illegal war, we're feeling as though we have a great debt of gratitude to you on the front line saying, no, I can't go on with this killing. This is immoral. It's just not right. I wonder if I want to tell listeners that you're accepting funds for the legal defense, and Trap Rock Peace Center is happy to accept any donations from people who need a tax-exempt donation. This will all go toward your legal defense expenses,
yeah.
Which I know can be tremendous. and we hope that you have no impediments of just needing a little bit more funding to get a full legal defense.
At this point, we're still reaching, we have a goal set, and I know that we haven't reached that goal, but, you know, we're proceeding. You know, we've made our choice, and obviously we're going to do this. This is what, it's not a game. It's not something that we're thinking about that, oh, if it doesn't work, we might back out on. You know, we have faith it's going to work because it's the truth to us. It's the truth of what we've thought about, what we've lived through, and what we believe. And so we know that, you know, if the financial aspect is tough in reaching our goals, it'll get there. It will get there. And as far as the legal assistance, we trust that because we just know that this is the right thing. And so, you know, we have people and organizations like Trap Rock and you know, that express their gratitude to us and to Kevin, but by the same token, it also goes back the other way because without organizations like yours, one, our road would be a much more difficult one, and two, it's insight that's provided through the work of people like you and your organization that helps us come to terms with what we feel in our heart that maybe we might not have been able to express so freely if it hadn't been for the work you people have already done.
Well, thank you, and we're feeling certain that, you know, Kevin, being 40 and you're making this momentous decision really opens the door to the younger people, Kevin, that you've spoken of, who may not have even heard of conscientious objection, that this is such an important approach you're taking to an immoral situation. I want to let people know that we'll be watching your story. We've been reading your letters and descriptions of the situation avidly. And I wonder what the climate is in the media there in Georgia.
It's in every paper that we can think of. And we hear every day, we have people calling. You know, a lot of times they don't leave their name, but they always tell us, we had someone call yesterday from a little place called Menosa in Wisconsin, and she said, I just want you to know the story's in our town.
Oh, good.
So, you know, we found out it's in the San Jose paper. It's in every little paper in Florida, and so we know that it's out there.
Well, we're all with you and hoping for the best, and may your life be full of peace and good cheer in the days ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.